Welcome to the weekend edition of the Daily Stoic. Each weekday, we bring you a meditation inspired by the ancient Stoics, something to help you live up to those four Stoic virtues of courage, justice, temperance, and wisdom. And then here on the weekend, we take a deeper dive into those same topics. We interview Stoic philosophers. We explore at length how these Stoic ideas can be applied to our actual lives and the challenging issues of our time. Here on the weekend, when you have a little bit more space, when things have slowed down, be sure to take some time to think, to go for a walk, to sit with your journal, and most importantly, to prepare for what the week ahead may bring.
There's a lot of things we know would be good for us. Problem is, we don't have time. It's just tougher. I think therapy is like that. We all know that sitting down, talking to someone, really working on our issues will make a difference. So the problem is finding a therapist, driving across town, all of that, right? And that's where Talkspace comes in, today's sponsor. Because by doing everything online, Talkspace has made getting the help you want easier, more accessible, and more affordable. With Talkspace, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours. You can have virtual sessions with your licensed therapist from the comfort of your home. And Talkspace is secure and private, using the latest end-to-end grade encryption to store client information and complying with the latest HIPAA regulations. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com/stoic and enter code SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/stoic and enter promo code SPACE80, that's 80, to get $80 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's Talkspace.com/stoic, promo code SPACE80.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, it's Ryan Holiday. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Stoic podcast. I would say of all the topics in Stoicism, the most controversial, the one that's, I think, hardest to talk about is, of course, suicide. The Stoics talk about it with almost shocking honesty. They refer to the choice of death as the open door, which is almost inconceivably casual to talk about such a permanent thing. Obviously, they did not have our understanding of mental health or depression or trauma or any of these things. But they also lived under real danger, whether it was plagues or tyrants or invading armies. Death was more real to the Stoics than it was to us. And so was pain and torture and unimaginable brutality. But it is something I try to talk about in the emails, because I try to put like a modern spin on our understanding, which is to me a Stoicism as a philosophy of endurance and of commitment to the common good and thinking about how our actions ripple through the world around us. Suicide isn't something that can be taken lightly. In fact, it's quite serious. And I think actually when you really read the Stoic material, you get this sense that they were not at all averse to asking for help, to working on themselves. It ties into one of the biggest hits of my guest today, the rapper Logic. If you haven't heard his song, 1-800-273-8255, I mean, I guess you're living under a rock or something. It's done more than a billion streams since it came out. And when it came out, it was a particularly well-timed hit because this is the year that Chris Cornell had killed himself and Chester Bennington of Linkin Park had killed himself. But it's a beautiful, powerful, important song about asking for help, about battling mental health issues, and most of all, sticking around, even if one sometimes feels like not doing that. And in fact, the number of the song is sort of brilliantly done, is the number for the suicide helpline. All of which is a little bit of a prelude because I don't get into it as much as I wanted to in the interview. But I am lucky enough today to have as my guest Bobby Hall, aka Logic, and the author of a memoir called This Bright Future. The way it works in publishing is, especially if you have a podcast, is you get pitched guests all the time. And usually it's like the publicist at a publisher or a, you know, an outside publicist. But when you get an email from an editor at a publishing house, you can usually trust that it's an important book that somebody actually believes in, as opposed to just like some thrown together celebrity project. And so in July, I got an email from Stuart Roberts, who is a senior editor at Simon & Schuster. He sent a really nice note and he said, "Hey, I'm publishing this memoir from Bobby Hall, and I think you would actually like it," he said. And I think this is a good description of the book. He said, "It's heart-wrenching yet uplifting." And he said, "It's the story of his resilience and self-actualization into the person and artist that he is today." And he said, "It's tragic, funny, profound, and a hell of a good read." And I would totally agree. So I said, of course, I would love to have Logic on. We had a great conversation. He was really cool. Fun to chat with. One of the biggest rappers in the world, but I felt very accessible, funny, self-aware, and real about himself and his struggles. And that comes through in the book. You know, again, I have a lot of guests on the podcast. I try to read all their books. I try to find something good in all the books that I read. But when I sat down to prep for the show, I thought, okay, I'm going to skim the book, you know, see what I can ask him about, because I was more familiar with his music. But I ended up reading the thing from cover to cover. I really enjoyed it. I took some notes too. I'm really excited. And I'm going to check out his other book, Supermarket, which is a novel, debuted at number one on the New York Times bestseller list. Anyways, here is my interview with the one and only Bobby Hall, aka Logic. His new book, This Bright Future, is out everywhere. And check him out on Spotify, because his music is quite good as well. Are you like a night owl musician, or are you like a regular, normal human being?
I think a majority of my life I was a night owl. I still am a night owl, like in general, for different reasons. When I was younger, I would just be up all night because my schedule was just completely messed up. Like, I remember going to sleep at like 1 p.m. type shit. And then can I cuss?
Yeah, of course.
Can I curse?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Swag. But yeah, so it's like that. Now it's a little different. I still work in the day, whether it's music or working on scripts or writing or whatever the case may be. But there's just something special about nighttime, especially knowing that like my son's asleep, like he's safe, my wife is asleep, like I've spent my time with my family, and now I get this for myself. So yeah. But we used to go hard. We'd go like 4 p.m. In my early days working on my first album, was when we had studio time that we're paying for.
Sure.
You know, $2,500 a day, and we're in there for like 9 months straight. It was like literally we get there at 4 and we'd leave at like 6-7 in the morning and then just go do it all over again.
Well, I love the book. I thought it was very good. It's interesting to think about your journey, from that point to where you are now, sort of semi-retired, working on other projects. You must sort of pinch yourself. Like, it must be so different, your day-to-day existence, from where you started.
Yeah, I mean, I started in this basement of my friend's house. You know what I mean? I started in the guest room of my godmother's crib in Gaithersburg, Maryland, like bumfuck middle of nowhere. So for me, now it's just incredible. Like, I love it. I love where I am now, because I had to pay so many dues and work so hard. And it's just like, you're working in a way that's so ignorant, because you have to be crazy. There's this part of you that has this dream that is so unattainable. Like, it's sure. Like, yeah, I want to be a big rap star. Like, yeah, right. Like, that is like never going to happen. But luckily I didn't have that, I guess. I mean, it's weird because I saw it with realism at the same time. You know, and I talk about it in the book. It's like, I built a brand. I wasn't like, oh yeah, bitches and hoes and right. Boats and yachts. Like, no. Like, I was like, okay, I'm going to brand myself. Who am I? I'm a nerd. I'm of mixed race, but I look white. There's not really anybody like me out there rapping. I'm, you know, I like sci-fi and shit. Like these are the things I'm going to do. I'm going to talk about this peace, love, and positivity. I'm going to be myself and hopefully it will work. And I think that's why it did work, because I looked at it from a business standpoint, not like, oh, I'm trying to get rich or I'm trying to this, or I'm trying to that. I always made music from my heart. And I think people connected with it. Also, it was just such a different time. Like I tell people today, even my manager, I'm like, dude, I have no idea, like in the world, how I would make it today as an artist. Everything is so oversaturated. I think there's like a million songs a day or some crazy shit like that that's released. Like I wouldn't know what to do. I came up on music blogs, dude.
No, I think about that too. I started my first blog the day I graduated from high school, which was in 2005. And there was, that was a hard thing to do. There wasn't like a million of them out there. And there was it was like, all these other people looked down on the tools. So you were the only one using them and you had this immense advantage. And then, yeah, now the things you would have to do to break through the noise, it's not a good incentive. It makes you not good. The things you have to do to break through.
Even myself, like literally I have like 6-something million followers on Instagram. I can't reach them all.
Right.
And the reason that I can't reach them is because now it's pay to play. So it's like I spent my entire life garnering, you know, getting those fans and those people. And if I post something, the algorithm is changed in a way. Cause I used to wonder like, man, why is it that I would get like millions of likes on a picture? Even all this is so fucking stupid and I'm so over it and I'm off the internet. But when I was on the internet, and that's why, because it rewards you. The more you're on it, the more you engage, the more you this, the more it lets you, you know, have the followers that you have actually be able to see what you do. And in the last 2.5 years that I've been basically utterly off, you know, these platforms, it like penalizes you for it. And I went from a million likes on a post to like 100,000, 200,000. And then as a person, you start to equate your worth to that. So you're like, oh, I'm not as popping as I was. I'm not as this as I was, that as I was. But I wised up and was like, first of all, I don't need any of that shit, you know, to justify my worth or you know, who I am as a man. But I just think it is kind of BS that they do that to you. You spend your whole life building something and then they just at the flip of, you know, switch, they just go, no, we're going to do things a little differently now. So if you really want this, you either got to pay us or you have to engage constantly. And it's just kind of messed up.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. It's obviously a very privileged place to be, but if you know how the game is played and you know what gets attention, you can like, you're on a show or you're talking to someone, or you're doing something and you're like, I know what I could do in this situation that would make this thing front page news or would get tons of attention. But you have to go like, do I actually want that? Is that who I want to be? Is that good? And I think some artists aren't in a position to say no to that because they need to break through. So it's a tricky thing.
And a majority of it is negativity. Let's just be real. It's like, fuck you and you ain't shit and blah, blah, blah. And I fucked your bitch and blah, all this stuff. And it's just like, okay, that's another reason why, like, I kind of wanted to retire. It's funny. Cause I was like, I'm retiring. And then like 11 months later, I'm like, I'm back. Like it seems crazy.
Yeah.
But what it really was, it was just a state of mind. So it's like, I created what I'd like to think is my opus. My last album, No Pressure, for me is a culmination of like a hungry kid on his come up, but I'm 30. So I'm not rapping about dumb shit. You know what I mean? I'm rapping about being a dad and a good husband. Like you don't really hear that in rap. It's very rare.
Sure.
So, but I was like, I'm just going to be myself, do this. I mean, I put every ounce of my entire career into like this one album. Because for a few years before then, I'd been like known kind of in the pop world. So I was making more pop records, making songs with Eminem and Marshmello and, you know, 1-800 came out. And it was just, so I was just, honestly, I was riding the train. I was still always making music from my heart, but I was like, oh, I can make, okay, crazy. Like for me, 2018 was a $30 million year. Because I was smart about it. You know what I mean? So I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. And I set myself up to then be able to do what I want when I want now. But it's just a crazy thing to think like, yeah, if I, you know, throw my middle fingers up and talk trash about an artist that I actually like. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, but that's what this world does to you. And it isn't just hip hop, but it is a very prominent thing in hip hop and always has been that it's like, you're not as good as me. You're not as this as me. You're not as that as me. And then it kind of pits people against each other. Like I've never been in a rap beef in my life. there's a lot of rat beefs with Logic, right? But I was never in one of them.
Sure.
And I've had basically every single person that ever talked shit about me later come up to me and be like, "Hey man, I'm sorry about what I said, and you was just really popping off. And if I'm gonna be real, man, I was just kind of jealous, man. Blah blah blah." And then we have this conversation, and then I open them with, you know, I welcome them with open arms, because the way I see it is, we're all just kids, man. You know, that's kind of one thing I've realized, like, while doing the press, I've been saying that while doing press for this book, like, we are, like, how can you tell a little 6-year-old kid, like, "You fucking suck, you're a piece of shit, your ideas are garbage, your way of thinking is trash." Like, you, unless you were a truly mentally ill person, you wouldn't say that to a child. And when I look at you, when I look at my reflection, when I look at all Travis Scott and Rihanna and Drake and this, I just see, like, young, pure artists at heart who are doing something because they love it. And yet they all get shit on constantly 24/7 by the internet, being told what they should do or what they shouldn't do, or their last album wasn't this enough or that enough. And that's another thing that I fucking hate about rap. Now, this is all getting back into the retirement, right? Is every album has to be the greatest album that ever, or you fell off, you're over, it's done. I was randomly on the internet, like, because my assistant gave me his phone because he posts everything, but I just wanted to write something personally myself. And, like, one of the first comments I see is like, "You fell off." And I'm like, "Bro, I sold 250,000 fucking units in my first week of my album last year, like less than a year ago. What does this even mean?" And I laughed it off. But what I'm saying is I wanted to leave that. So it's not even that I really wanted to leave music. I can take criticism. There's a big difference between, "Oh, these hi-hats aren't, you know, or they're too loud, or the mixing on this is weird, or I'm not sure I really understood his message." There's a difference between that and, "Hey, yo, this motherfucker suck ass, dog." Like, there's a big difference. So I didn't want to subject myself to that any longer. And then after doing that and taking time away, mind you, I was still making music every day because I do it from my heart, I realized, oh, I can release music. It's all here. There is no spoon, man. It's like, okay, I'm going to start dropping music, and it doesn't have to be the greatest album ever created. It doesn't have, I'm just going to have fun. And that's all that matters. Sorry for that very long
winded. No, I love that. There's a story that I tell in one of my books about Joseph Heller, who wrote Catch-22, and Kurt Vonnegut, who wrote Slaughterhouse-Five. And they're at this party of this billionaire. And Kurt Vonnegut is teasing Joseph Heller. And he says, "You know, how does it feel to know that the guy whose house we're in, some billionaire or whatever, made more money this week than your book will make in its lifetime?" And he says, "Well, I have something that that guy doesn't have." And he says, "What could that possibly be?" And he says, "I know what enough is." And, well, I love that story because it's not, you know, after Joseph Heller writes Catch-22, he doesn't stop writing books. That's not the end of it. I think it's a difference between doing something from a place of needing to prove something or needing to, like, be something, and from a place of fullness where you're just, like, happy with who you are and you actually enjoy the work itself.
Dude, I'm going to tell that story forever.
It's a great
that
story.
It's incredible, man. I was, so there's a incredible radio personality who goes by the name of Big Boy. He's got a show called Big Boy's Neighborhood. And I remember talking to him. I need to call him. Make sure I call Big Boy, man, because he's a good dude. excuse me. A couple years ago, like 2 years ago, this is just before I moved to the middle of nowhere, I was on the phone with him having a conversation. And he brought up enough. He was like, "Everything's just about enough this and enough that." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "The whole game is you're not good enough. You're not cool enough. You're not big enough. You're not popular enough. You're not strong enough. You're not tough enough. You're not gangster enough. You're not black enough. You're not this enough. You're not that enough." And I was like, "Oh my God." And he goes, "I know that I am good enough." And I was just like, holy shit. And it's true. We're kind of almost brainwashed in a way that, you know, if I'm not doing Drake numbers, like, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm not doing this, if I'm not doing that, it's like, I've done Drake numbers. I have billions of streams. Like, I've done that.
Yeah.
But maybe now I'm not doing it like I was, but I also am focused. You know, like one of the critiques that I've had in the last few years is like, oh, he's not like hungry anymore. Like he's not that, he's not rapping like he's on his come up. Like music isn't his everything. To those three things I say, of course I'm not hungry. Like my fridge has been full for quite some time. So when I step to the mic now, it's dessert. It's because I enjoy it. It's fun. No, I'm not a skinny little kid on his come up anymore. I'm not. I'm accomplished. I'm an accomplished man. And I understand that. And then three, you're right. Music is not my everything anymore. My son is, and my wife. So it's like, well, this is what you get from me. And I don't think that that's any worse. I think it's just more mature. But in hip hop, it's always about the struggle and the grind and the this. And bro, I struggle, but like I struggle to juggle millions of dollars. Like I struggle to make sure I can pay my employees. And sometimes you got to let certain people go so that you can like those. Yeah, I have champagne problems. But hey, man, that's what I'm dealing with. Like I've already been broke. I've already been on food stamps. I've already been surrounded by drug addicts and violence and murder and guns. I've already cooked crack. I've already like. I already did it and I wrote about it. So I think, yeah, I'm going to wrap about being a good dad.
I've talked a lot about my morning routine here. One of the things I do every morning after I get up is I take a bunch of vitamins that my doctor recommended after some blood tests. I take a vitamin C, a zinc, a omega-3, and I take a couple others who I'm forgetting, but I definitely know whose vitamins I take. And they actually happen to be today's sponsor, and I've been taking them long before Thorne sponsored today's episode. Thorne takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness with all their supplements, and they've teamed up with leading medical professionals to bring out highly effective nutritional supplements. Because I'm a runner, I'm always trying to take care of my joints. And with Thorne, I never have to question what's in each supplement. Give your body what it really needs with Thorne. Go to thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit, FIT/dailystoic, and use code dailystoic for 10% off your order. thorne.fit/dailystoic. Use code dailystoic. And note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The Daily Stoic is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. One of the cool things about podcasts is that you can multitask while you're listening, but depending on what you're doing right now, like for instance, if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you could be doing. You could be getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $700 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 29 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $698 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
When you think about the most popular sort of rap movie of all time, or popular with rappers, what does Tony Montana have in his house? The world is not enough. That there is no such thing as enough. That you never feel good. That you can never feel happy with yourself. But the irony of that movie is that it's a cautionary tale. I mean, he fucking dies. It's a horrible cautionary tale of what happens when you can never be satisfied and you're willing to do anything to get more.
Yeah, dude, enough. Like, that's the thing. Like, I think that's the word of this conversation. Like, literally, I was on this hamster wheel. I thought about killing myself. And then I was like, oh, 1-800 guy can't kill himself. He'll just be a meme. like it's crazy. Like I found myself so depressed. I had anything and everything I could have ever wanted, and yet I wasn't happy. And the reason that I wasn't happy is because I was doing it for other people. And sure, there were people in my pocket that got paid when I got paid. So then it's like, you got to go on this tour. You got to go on this to this festival. You got to do this opportunity. You got to go, go, go. And then I'm hearing things like, oh man, you know, This isn't gonna last forever, man. Like, and then I'm like, shit, well, how's that supposed to make me feel? And that, and then before you know it, you're just like emaciated, you're mentally unstable, you're in a place of just total and complete despair and unhappiness. And that's just not a place that I wanted to be. And like I said, it's just like, okay, I already had a number one. And then I had several consecutive number ones, whether it's number one overall albums, number one hip hop albums, number one song, number one this, number one that. Well, who gives a shit? Like, and I've been saying, like, the only I have accomplished every single thing that you could accomplish as a musician, except win a Grammy. Hey, JT, can you hand me that that plaque right there? I want to show you something cool. Just please don't break it. I think it's on a nail. No, this. Yeah, that one. Yeah, that one with the handwriting on it. Yeah, just grab that shit real quick. Perfect. Thank you very much. I'm going to show you something there. Hopefully there's not too much glare.
Yeah, I can see it.
So this says me practicing my autograph. And if my memory serves me correct, because I can't look at it right now.
2010.
It was 2010. 8 years later. That is a platinum ticket for selling out Madison Square Garden. This is like probably my favorite thing. And I don't even look at it because it shows me like, dude, you did it. And you did it in 8 years. And here you go, JT. Thank you so much. And it's like, I don't think I've ever showed anybody that really. And cool. Well, yeah. Then what? What are you just going to do? Fucking Madison Square Garden 20 times in a row? Like, geez, bro, have a life. Like, you're good enough, man. Go do other things. And that's where I'm at now. Like, now I just wrote this film. I'm funding it myself, starring in it. I got a great director. It's just going to be awesome. And I'm going to have a blast doing it. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to spend $2 million. Like, nobody just wants to drop $2 million on something unless it's like a house. But I do not want to look back and be filled with regret. And I've been kind of in the film game for a couple of years, and it's always a million cooks in the kitchen, and one director loves it or the head of film loves it, but then the head of film changes, and then it's this and da da da, and then there you are with this amazing script that they bought for 500 grand, but now it's yours again because 3 years have gone by, and it's like, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to do what I love.
Well, here, I have a Grammy story for you. Hang on one sec.
Hey.
So I've had my number ones as an author. So I know what you're talking about on a smaller scale, but a couple of years ago, I was an associate producer or something. It was a favor to a friend who was doing a jazz album, and the jazz album got nominated for a Grammy. So I went to the Grammys as a producer, got to go up on stage. It won a Grammy, for the second tier. You know, there's like the real Grammys and then there's like the other categories, right?
It's all real.
Of course it's real, but this is the story. So I go up on stage, we all accept the Grammy. There's only one of them. They only give one, but there's like 10 producers on the album, right? So I was like, do we get one? And they're like, no, you got to go online and buy your own. So I buy the Grammy, I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put a little plaque on it. So I put a plaque on it, right? The plaque says, when you die, this will go in the trash with all your other accomplishments, right? And to me, it's a reminder of like, the what are people going to do with that or any of the things that you have accumulated in your life, no matter how successful you are? None of it really matters. What matters is sort of who you were as a person, and did you leave anything like on the table as far as your creative potential? To me, that's what's interesting. Not how many copies did you sell, how successful you were, how many tours did you do, how many people did you support, whatever, but like, did you do your best while you were in the game? To me, that's what matters. Everything else is garbage.
I completely agree. I think it's so fucking cool you have a Grammy.
It's not a real Grammy. Again, you have to buy it. But I did win. I was on a producer on an album that won a Grammy.
Yeah, dude, you won a Grammy. I agree. I think for me, it's not about, none of this shit we can take with us and we can pass it along, but given enough time on this earth, it'll all become garbage anyway, right? So
yes.
It's like, for me, I would rather do the best that I possibly can to instill good values in my son, be a good friend, father, son-in-law, because that's the shit that really like kind of shapes the world. Even though it's so minute, if I'm being a good guy and you're being a good guy and she's being a good woman and, you know, XYZ, it's like that will kind of trickle down. So especially in my music, spreading the message, peace, love, and positivity, be yourself, don't worry, follow your dreams, do what you love. It sounds cliche, but somebody's got to say it, and I'm more than happy to do it.
Well, let's say 1-800 doesn't do a billion streams. It doesn't become what it is. I've got to imagine, though, you'd still be very happy with that song from the human beings that you've heard from who it did something for.
100%, man. I mean, that's the only reason I wrote it. It was the first idea I had for the album, Everybody, that it's on. And it was the last song that I did because I dreaded it. Because I was like, oh God, I don't want to put myself in this place and write this song, but I need to do it. You know, I want to do it. Sure. I want to help people. I want people to know they're not alone. And, you know, and it's such a stigma. It's like, bro, it's kind of crazy in the last 3 years, especially around the time that song came out, how much mental health is like a big part of kind of the conversation now. I'm not saying it's something I started. I'm saying people before me started that. Kid Cudi, you go even long before him, but people being open with their emotions. And nobody was in the studio like, I don't want to be a laugh. This is going to be a banger, dog. Like, nobody. Right. And that's why I love it, actually. I love it so much. Well, I loved it and then I hated it and now I love it again, which happens, I think, with any like hit record, right?
Sure.
So it's like, I loved it because I made it purely from my heart. I was not thinking about this, that, or the third. And then it became this huge thing. And then everywhere I go, I'm surrounded by death and sadness and suicide. And it's really sad. And then it kind of engulfs you because like you're the suicide guy and everywhere right. you go, like people are just talking about death, 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 death. And then I got to take a break. And now I think, I mean, I can't tell you how proud I am of the song. I'm excited to do it. And it's kind of cool to know I have one of those songs that's going to be on like Now Music Compilation 58. Like, it's kind of dope that I could go anywhere, I think, in my life for the rest of my life and play at least just that one song. And people who aren't even hip hop heads could know it and appreciate it. It makes me feel
What is the thing about mental health where somehow people think it's like a weakness or whatever? It's like, if you're not around, how tough are you actually? Right. Like, so it's a strange thing. Rap especially has that weird, sort of catch up on that where it's like, it's always made me laugh. Like how rap is associated with like tough guys and violence. It's like, you guys sing and write poetry. That's what your job is. Right. Like not, and I say that as a person who likes poetry, right? Like I'm a writer. So yeah. I think what I like about your persona too, is that it's honest. You're like, I like music, I like art, I like creative things. That's who I am. Yeah. It's so weird that rap tries to be the exact opposite of what it actually is.
It's the gladiator, man, in the Coliseum, dude. So like, if you go back to what hip hop was built upon, right? It's built on Sugar Hill Gang, it's built on Kool Moe Dee and DJ Kool Herc and Run DMC and, you know, I'm black and I'm proud and, you know, spread love throughout our community and blah, 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 which is great. But then, you know, you also have another poet telling his life that he sees. And what he sees is bitches on the street and Cadillac grills, and he sells crack cocaine, and he does all this. And I think at first, even if you go back and really listen to it, there was some braggadocio to it for sure. I mean, that's what hip hop was built upon, braggadocio. It's like, I'm the best, and I got the mic, and motherfucker wanna fuck with me. It's like, it's funny, you know what I mean? It's fun, it's cool. But then somehow, okay, we wanna see the gladiator die. We wanna see the blood, we wanna see the lions. So it's just everything. I mean, look at film, cinema, look at Shakespeare, man, you know, fucking Romeo and Juliet, they're dying. People are like, this is awesome. Like, there's something about death and destruction that we are so like, it's like almost compulsive that we like have to view this. It's why everyone loves World Star and everybody at some point has seen like a fight on YouTube. Like, right. It just is what it is. Even if you don't want it, even if you don't like it, you're like, oh my God. But like, I'll see like the bully, like what is it called? Like revenge or whatever, karma.
Yeah.
Like I kind of love watching those videos and seeing a bully get punched in his face. But at the end of the day, it's like, oh no, nobody should be getting punched in their face. Like, this isn't good, but like repeat. So I think it stems from that. And another thing, especially in hip hop, is the misogyny. So this all stems back down to mental health and feelings and having conversations. So it's like, oh no, that's pussy shit, man. Like, women talk about their feelings, bruh. And then we perpetuate this notion that men, and we're teaching these young boys that they're essentially not allowed to have emotions. So then they deal with those emotions in different ways. Instead of sitting down and having a conversation with your wife or your girlfriend and saying, you really hurt me when you did this. Nah, you know, a motherfucker will like punch her in the face or whatever the case may be. And that isn't just in hip hop, mind you. It really isn't. I mean, it's in rock and roll. It's in this, it's in that. Sure. It's just in society. And it's a very terrible thing. So I think there is a bit of misogyny as well that goes into like, oh, emotions are for women. And it's like, bro, we're all human beings, though. Like, what are you talking about?
Well, yeah. And when you come from poverty or dysfunction, what you're really talking about is the trauma or generational trauma that's not being dealt with. So I think the mental health stuff is so important because, like, first off, like when I, especially the early pages in your book, it's like, not only was that horrible, nobody deserves to have gone through what you went through, but I think people struggle with the idea of like, okay, but I did go through it and now I have to deal with it. Now I have to go through it in therapy or sobriety or what. Now I actually have to deal with this painful trauma that I went through as a kid, or as we're talking about, you're going to perpetuate that cycle on the next generation, either through your art or through your own children.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me, it was always a form of not even just self-expression, but just therapy, right? So I get to write like while I'm in, you know, a terrible situation or with my mother, who was not really the best example as a parent. I'm writing about that. I'm writing about not wanting to be on food stamps anymore. And I'm writing about these different things, which is actually really funny. I don't know that I mentioned this so much in my book, but it's funny because like I'd write a rap and then I'd show my mom and I'm like, life is hard, man. This shit gets crazy. And then she like blows up on me and is like, why are you fucking cursing, you motherfucker? Like, that's my mom.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. So then I'm like torn, like taken aback, and I'm like, okay, here's this woman who's cursing all the time, but I'm actually using it as a form of self-expression. So there's some people who just don't like curse words and blah, 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 and whatever. I mean, shit's a little more lenient, right? Just nowadays. Yeah. I don't know why, but because we're all going to hell, I guess. But when I say fuck, man, I mean that shit. Like, I love that word. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yes, I can be articulate and express myself in various ways, but it's just like, sometimes that's what I like to say. So when you're trying to express yourself in this way, and then you're shot down, especially by someone like your own mother, who she was a writer. She never had anything published and she wrote on loose leaf paper, but she was a writer. And she, you know, I think that's a part of like where I get it from. But that therapy, man, it started there. It started, there was nobody to listen to what I had to say except the page. But I think, dude, just being open with yourself, being honest, like, mental health is so important. It is. Anyway, sorry.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. I talk about that in Growth Hacker Marketing. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stoic. That's netsuite.com/stoic.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
No, I think it is. And it is nice to see it as a trend in sports and music and art as a thing. And yeah, it's so funny. Like, we just went through this with the Olympics with Simone Biles, where she was like, I'm not feeling it. It's not working. What's always so amazing to me is the incredibly strong opinions that other people have about things people are doing in their life to take care of themselves.
Yeah, I mean, story of my life, bro. It's like, yeah, whether it's even to take care of yourself or to express yourself
or to be yourself,
or to be yourself. It's like other people, but I think so many folks are just not happy in their own skin, right? Yeah. So it's like I step up on stage and I'm like, hey guys, I'm black, but like not really, but I am. But like, and then people are like, like it's just like, oh, chill, bro. Like, why is it such a big deal? It's like literally everybody in my family's black. Like, think about this for a moment. In 2018, when I released my album, Everybody, it was like, people, all right, I don't know how much of the book you got through, but it's like
all
people
it.
Called it. Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I can't tell you, you know, sometimes you do this and people don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
I know how that goes.
I can tell you know what you're talking about, but I appreciate it. So, you know, one of the things I talk about in the book is it's like, when I released Everybody, it was the first time in my professional career that I ever actually really expressed myself about my race. So constantly it was like, oh, white. So you're white, you're white, you're white. And then I'm in these, doing these interviews and I'm like, well, no, my dad's black. Like I'm of mixed race. Like that's how I identify. Right. And most people are like, oh, cool. And then it's not really a thing, but in hip hop overall, as I got bigger and bigger, it became this like huge thing where it's like, there's no way, man. Like you're not black. You're not this, you're not this. Yeah. And it's just a fight. It's like an argument. And so, for me, kind of dealing with all this, it was just really weird because on three songs on an album for the first time in my career, I just express that. I say, hey man, I'm black and I'm white and this is me. And then it became a fucking meme. So it became like a like biracial meme. Like everyone, I'm biracial. And they're like making fun of me. But nobody's going like, I'm Asian. I'm black. Like what? That's like so racist. Like, do you know what I mean? And you have these like people of all colors, especially white people, I would see doing it, kind of being like, oh, he's biracial. That's all he talks about. That's all he talks about. And I also say in the book where it's like, you got cats like Black Thought, Killer Mike, Kendrick Lamar. I'm black. I'm blacker than black. I'm the blackest black, black. Like every fucking song, they talk about how proud they are to be black. And it's amazing. And then I go, hey guys, guess what? I'm two things at the same time. And they're like, shut the fuck up. And then they just so, and I couldn't understand it. And the reason I couldn't understand it is because of how much of a minority I am. So it's just a real thing. Like, and I even say this, you know, in the book as well, people are like, oh, you don't know what it's like to walk down the street as a black man though. And I'm like, yeah, I don't, but you also don't know what it's like to live as a black man inside a white man's body. And why are we even, why is this a competition? Like, I'm not mad at you for the things you've gone through. Why are you mad at me for expressing my life, my truth, and who I am? And even this right here is a hot take. Here is a man who is comfortable with who he is, who is just spitting facts right now. This is just truth. But because it has to do with race and because I got white skin and I like, you can't say this and the perception of it, but it's just like, it's a fucking crazy thing that there was a time in my career where people, where the world was openly racist towards me, but because of how I look, it was more like he wishes he was black. He this, he that. It was kind of crazy. I mean, I'm past all that shit now, but it fucking hurt, man. It really hurt.
Well, no, I can imagine, because it's taking something that you've had to deal with your whole life and then acting as if you're somehow using it to your advantage, when clearly it wasn't to your advantage most of your life. It was funny, though, in the book, did your dad just get the worst vasectomy of all time? Did your dad have two kids after a vasectomy? How's that even possible?
Well, no. He had me.
Yeah.
And then he got a vasectomy. And then 30 years later.
Oh, okay.
A friend of his from the program, from AA, was dying. And she was like, I want you to take care of my daughter. And he fucked her. He fucked her daughter. And she was a heroin addict who would then go on to overdose and die from heroin, which is extremely unfortunate. And their son is my little brother, Ashton.
Yeah. And you want to talk about, like having impact, right? You think about the multi-generational impact that your father has had through not positive means, right? And like, I think it's so interesting, right? We want to be the biggest or the most famous or the most powerful, because then that'll create a legacy. Meanwhile, people are having legacies every single day through their children.
And that's like just not enough for them to focus on. That's like not that important. And so like when I think about whenever I'm getting caught up like a work problem, I go like the real, like when I think about my grandparents' impact on me, that's three generations. I think, oh, the most important project I have is the one at home.
I mean, he said it better than I can, man. I look at my boy and I'm just like, dude, I just want to be a good dad. And I don't know how, like he is this 19 month, you know, year and a half old little baby. How do you blow cigarette smoke constantly in a small fucking, you know, welfare, social security, you know, like box given to you from the government. And you're just this little baby, me, was inhaling this shit. How do you like getting fights and like, you know, seeing my mom get beaten by men or my sister's raped and sexually assaulted and coming home and all this, like, how do you do that to a child? Like, I just don't get it. So I think like, hey man, as long as I don't smoke crack, I think the kid's going to be all right. Like that's it. So yeah.
Has that been helpful for you? I was talking to someone about this recently and you know, I think sometimes it can be hard to imagine what it was like to be a child or to be yourself in your own childhood. I think like I kind of have my childhood was traumatic like yours, but it wasn't the best. And having a kid now helps me understand because I can see my kid interact with my parents and I go, oh, this is how they treat four-year-olds, right? Not great, right? Like this, like not abusive in any way, but not conducive to being well adjusted, right? Like this is, and I see this with my in-laws who I love quite a bit. You just see how people of a certain generation interact with children. And then you go, oh, it must've been really hard for me when I was 5 years old or 6 years old or 10 years old or 17 years old. You know, I think having kids helps you have empathy for your younger self in a way that's difficult to do.
I think it's weird. I think that's especially true for people kind of in our generation, right? Because things are more open, mental health and these discussions and us as teenagers trying to like wrestle with our emotions and our feelings and then finding other people who feel that way and blah, blah, blah. So I think in many ways we're like emotionally wiser than our predecessors for sure.
Yeah.
But there's also always been really great parents out there as well. But yeah, I mean, you really hit the nail on the head, dude. Like when I think about how I was treated as a kid, like, and every day wasn't bad. It's not like every single day was screaming and crying and, you know, we had like a good Tuesdays every now and then, but yeah. So for, I feel you, man, it's weird.
Yeah. Cause you talk about in the book, you're like, at the time I thought this was cool. And you're like, now as an adult, I'm like, I shouldn't have been watching this television show with my mom. You know, like you kind of get, it's like in the moment you think one thing. And then as you get older, you're like, I should not have been in that situation at all. That's insane.
Dude. Yeah, it's like even there's a story about me experience like being sexually assaulted as a kid, which I didn't really realize. And even now I look back and it's funny, but the long story short is like my dad's girlfriend, I was eating Skittles and had me come over and she put some Skittles in her mouth and passed them from her mouth to my mouth. And she looked like a skeleton with Van Halen hair. And and then we started tongue kissing. And it's just like the most disgusting thing. Like if a man does that to a little girl, it's like, oh my God. But there's some weird part of like, if it's a woman, and I was little, so I was kind of like, nice. Like I was like, awesome, you know, but now I look back and I'm like, oh no, that is like, that's horrible. Like that's not a good thing at all.
So how have you dealt with some of that stuff now? I know you mentioned going to therapy and stuff, but how have you worked? Because I mean, none of that is normal and probably none of it is healthy to just carry around.
I don't know, dude, I don't know how I'm here today. So like, that's the, you know, it's just like, it never affected me. It's weird. Like it did, but I would deal with it. Even in that moment of being like, noise, there was a part that was like, oh, but also gross. Like there's something that wasn't right about that. You know, seeing my dad smoke crack, oh, let's not smoke crack. You know, seeing my mom being beaten by men, other kids would grow up to then beat women. You know, it's I just was like, no, we're not going to do this. We're going to treat women good. We're not going to steal. We're going to be kind. We're not going to tell lies. And I've, you know, I talk about some fucked up shit that I've done in this book. I've done some, I'm not, I wasn't like the best kid. I've stolen from friends. I spit in people's Gatorades. We know about that. Like,
yes.
And, but those things shaped me. It was those eternal sunshine of a spotless mind, Joel, you know, as Jim Carrey moments, killing this bird and realizing like, oh, I feel horrible. So every time I did make a mistake, I think I learned from it. I think most people don't, or they feel bad in the moment, bury it down, and then forget about it, and then kind of continue to make the same mistakes.
Yeah, well, you thank your dad at the end, right, for showing you how not to be a dad.
You know, it's funny, man. I was doing my thank yous, and I like, I feel so bad, but I don't. Because people are like, damn, you say some crazy shit in this book, right? Because it's like, my dad is just a piece of shit. Like, you know what I mean? But like, there's a part of me that still loves him.
Sure.
Like I texted, we were texting for a while. And then I was like, you know, this book is about to come out. And I was like, I don't want calls and texts from my dad about how I'm lying and none of it's true and blah, blah, blah. Because he either is denying it himself or was too like high on crack cocaine to even remember leaving me in a car.
Sure.
Or XYZ. So I blocked him. Right now he's blocked on my phone. And in a month or two, I'll unblock him and I'll call him normal and just say, hey dad, how's it going? You know, and we can have that conversation then. But yeah, it's insane.
Those sound like very, very good boundaries. I mean, that sounds like what you're doing.
Yeah, but back to the to the, you know, acknowledgments of the book. It was very difficult to actually write that, even that thing. I basically thank my dad. I say to my dad, thank you so much for showing the man that I never wanted to be become. That's like the most fucked up thing you can kind of say to somebody, but it's the truth. Like I talk about my mother, my brothers, my sisters, my father. It is just so honest. And in many ways, I'm sure you read it and you're like, damn, like it almost seems like I'm, well, sometimes I am comedically making fun of people and joking, but I also explain how like we make fun of each other and blah, blah, blah. But for the most part, it's like, yeah, like it's true. Like Donna, my dad's girlfriend, when I was a little kid, looked like a skeleton with Van Halen hair. Like I'm a storyteller. Like yeah. That's the best way you want to hear, you want to hear that, you know? And I think it's also adding, you know, just comedic value is how I also kind of coped with things, you know, like being creative and trying to be funny and blah, blah, blah. It's just how you deal with it. Like, you know, I got this line about that. I don't even know where it's going to go. I don't know what it is. It's like a horrible joke, but it's like, you know, yeah, I was black and white and everybody in my family's black. And I remember, I went to school and all the black kids, I saw them. It was the first day of school and I went over to go hang with them. And then I hear, oh shit, it's a white boy. Let's kick his ass. And I'm like, yeah, let's kick his ass. And then before I know it, I'm getting my ass kicked. And then I walk home after school and I'm all bloody and I've got a fat lip and I go home and I'm looking at all my brothers and my sisters and my dad and everybody's all black. And I'm looking at my skin. And I'm like, did you guys leave me in a house fire or something? So it's like, I don't know that it's the best joke, but I've had this joke in my head for like 5 years. And it's because of how actually hard it was, how like that just shows that that joke says, oh, I identify with black folks because everybody in my family is black besides my mother. And yet when I go with the people that I identify with, that I am a part of their culture and grow up and know everything that they know because I am them, but I'm not. How can I make that funny and deal with that pain while also doing it in a way that's like therapeutic at the same time? And whether it's a stupid joke like that or a rap, you know, on an album, the craziest part is when you can accept that, when you can get through it, when you can deal with it creatively instead of through self-harm or drugs, abuse, substance. And then the entire world makes jokes about you being biracial and all that. I mean, just imagine that, dude. Like it's a difficult thing, but luckily I've grown from it.
Yeah, I mean, that the one benefit of an artistic career is that you get to take all of that stuff, all of the pain, all of the struggle, all of the alienation and the mistakes and all of the one benefit of this profession is that you get to use that stuff in a way that if you were a banker would not be of the same value.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, maybe for fun alone, but yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just saying you can't, if you're a banker, you can't just choose, you can't just take the trauma of your childhood and turn that into deals, right? In the way that as an artist, it becomes your work product. It becomes actually the source of your alienation becomes the source of your connection with the audience. It's a art is a beautiful thing in that it transforms pain and loss and suffering into connection and beauty and art.
I agree. I think one of the hardest parts of being an artist is actually releasing the art for a bunch of people who don't know what the fuck they're talking about
right.
to tell you how they feel about it. And the craziest part about that too, I struggle with, I go back and forth is, well, if everybody says they love it, well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But then if somebody says, oh no, this isn't good, but it's like, well, we're still then holding value in what people are saying, because if they love it, we're like, you got it. But if they say you hate it, we're like, you don't understand it. But at the end of the day, I don't think art is really meant to be understood or not. I think we just got to put it out and know that we did that for us. Like, first and foremost, we did it for ourselves, and we did it for the people we do hope that it will connect with. And yet, just like walking into an African plain, you know, 2000 years ago, the first thing you're going to look for are the lions. And when you're in a comment section after you release a new song, I love you. This is amazing. This is incredible. You're like, yeah. You fucking suck.
You look for the threats.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't get it.
No, I think realizing that it's all bullshit is really helpful, and that none of it is really of value. Like, I have this weird thing in how my work has come out, where like most of my work was sort of not critically received or appreciated, but it sold very well, resonated well with the audience. Then the book that I'm most proud of was the most critically received, well received, but sold the fewest copies. And you're just like, okay, the compass doesn't matter. It only matters what you think, right? Like, it only matters if you're proud of it, if you think it's your best work. That's really the only thing you control and the only thing you should measure. You should measure by the inner scorecard, not the outer scorecard, because it's the only one that you have really any consistency with.
I agree. It's just, sometimes it's just hard to do, dude, you know, because it's like my worst quote unquote album is an album that came out in 2019 called Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. And it was like my most popular, most talked about, most loved or hated, had some of my biggest songs on it. One of them with Eminem. Like, it's just funny how that works. Like, it's such a weird thing. And I loved it. I love it. I never understood the hate. And then like years later, people are like, oh, Confessions. Like, I love that. Or even from my first novel, Supermarket, that I wrote, which was super fun. And it was, you want to talk about therapeutic, dude, like that whole thing, like I was so depressed and ridden with anxiety. And I just wrote up, like took that main character and just wrote it like it was me. And I didn't do it for anybody else. And I actually came out on the other side, like so much stronger and better. And then people could say, oh, this book sucks, or I get it, or this or that, or whatever, who gives a shit. But I did a soundtrack for it, and people, and it was like indie, kind of like indie rock alternative stuff. And it was the first time I'd ever done it. And we all have to start somewhere.
Sure.
And I'm happy with how it turned out. I love it, but people just shit on it, dude. Like, they were like, this is garbage. Like, this is the worst thing you could have ever done. You've fallen off. You've this, you've that, you blah, 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 blah. And now it's like people can't get the vinyls anywhere. It's become this like sacred, holy grail of like logic vinyls and music. It's and now every now and again, like, even just for fun, like I'll release a song on YouTube, won't even really tell anybody about it. Maybe I'll tweet it out. Only real core fans will know about it. And there's some songs I've done more alternative or folky, and they're like, oh, Supermarket Vibes, my favorite. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Well, and to think also, you're mentioning an album that came out in 2019. The time you're looking at a time span of 3 years, right? You know, some of these things take years to shake out. Is sort of where they fit. So that's the other thing, you know, and why I think the inner scorecard is more important is like, okay, what if it was garbage and people really appreciated it at the time? And then as time passed, it became seen as the garbage that it was. What if it was amazing? It was seen as terrible. And then 30 years after you die, it finally gets the shake that it deserves, right? All of that is that, and that happens. I mean, there's so many examples of that happening. So at the end of the day, you kind of just got to go like, what matters is like, did I do what I was capable of doing? And is it close to what my vision was when I set out to do it? I think that's all you control. Right.
literally every project I've ever released was never as good as the one before it, like to people. Like, sure. I released a mixtape. Oh, this is pretty cool. And then the next one's like, it's not as good as this. And I goes, I'll never forget. I dropped my album. People were like, this artwork is trash.
Your first painted, album?
Yeah, Under Pressure. This artwork is trash. Under Pressure. That's the worst album title, blah, blah, blah. He's totally, he's not where he was with his mixtapes, which they said sucked. And then it's like, then I do my second album and they're like, what is this? An album about space, the incredible true story, garbage title. This is so whack. You don't belong in hip hop. You're rapping about sci-fi planets and Rubik's cubes and shit. And then I drop my third album, Everybody. And it's like biracial, like literally black people were like, this is All Lives Matter album. White people were like, this demonizes white people. Like it just didn't fit anywhere. And now it's like people look back at those first two albums and they're like classic. These are like classic all time hip hop albums. And I'm just like, all right.
And you can't win. So you might as well not even play is how I think about it. Okay. Last question for you.
Wait, real quick. Yeah. What you just said is why I retired. You can't win. So you might as well not even play. And I fucking feel that shit. And that's why I did it. And then I realized, no, I can play by myself.
Yeah. Right. You can do it. You can do it for different reasons. It's like play stupid games, win stupid prizes, as the saying goes. But if you play a different game, you know, you win. If you're playing a game which just against yourself, like you're not going to lose, right? So that's how I think about it.
Agreed. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. I know you got to go. So I was thinking about.
I mean, I got a little bit of time, dude.
All right. Well, it sounds like we're on the same page too, as far as leaving and moving out in the middle of nowhere. I live outside Austin, Texas, on a farm for the same reason. But walk me through the process of deciding to get out of LA and live a different life.
First and foremost, not to sound no type of way, but when you're where I'm at financially, they be taxing you like 55%, dog.
Yeah.
So sure. I was like, okay, I can't do this shit. So that was a big one. I mean, imagine that. You make $1 million, 55% of it is gone immediately. And we're not talking about commissions and business managers and management and attorneys and like who take their cut. Like we're talking about
straight. That's a steep price to pay, especially if you don't like Los Angeles, which is the space that I was in.
I'm not a scene guy. Yeah. Right. Don't get me wrong. There's a couple restaurants I like. I like going to Nobu. It might sound bougie, but I like good sushi, shit like that. But I was like not at the club.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a married man. What am I doing at the club? I'm not at the club. Unless I'm paid to be there to like rap and then get the fuck out of there.
Sure.
But anyway. So it was that. It was having a child. I didn't necessarily want, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, my wife was born there and she's awesome, but it just wasn't for me. It just didn't feel right. It was also like, it's the desert. Like when you really think about it, it's like the desert. And
Los Angeles is the desert.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you can't, there's no like vegetation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like tumbleweeds and shit. So I was like, all right, I want to go somewhere lush. I really love Maryland, but I don't want to go back there. So I'll try to find some. And we found a really beautiful house in Utah. It's funny because we looked all over. We looked in Japan. We looked in London. We looked in Canada. We looked all over the States. Just like where could we live that could be amazing? But we found like the most beautiful house here. And who knows how long we'll even be here. I'm like nomadic in that way, but we loved it and we're here and it's so quiet and slow and we just hang out and shoot guns and watch movies and chill, man. It's great.
No, I know that vibe very well. And you know, I think it actually makes it easier to do art the way you're talking about, where if you're not running into a bunch of people who do the same job as you, it's easier not to compare yourself and to just do what you think is good at your own schedule.
It's also been very humbling because like I get recognized for sure, but like a lot of the time, dude, like I don't out here, especially like I would go in LA. It's LA. Like I'd go to like the store for coconut water. And it's just like, oh, Logic, oh my God, like immediately like pulling their phone out and shit. And that's cool. But then it kind of gets old. So then when I moved here, I was like, oh, nobody really knows who I am. And then I was like, oh my God, am I falling off? Am I not? Do people not care about me anymore? But I kind of like it because who knows if I will continue to be a big name in music, or if I'll just kind of be a guy who had like a really great run and has a solid fan base and he makes music. And now I'm getting into film. So am I going to be more known for that in 10 years? Am I this or that? Who knows? But it's been like a nice wind down of kind of just realizing I don't need to be this huge mega celebrity, whatever bullshit, you know, and I like it. At first it was difficult, and sometimes it still is. Like I cried like a week ago in bed with my wife because I was like, and it was a weird cry. It wasn't really a sad cry. It was like, that part of my life is over.
Yeah.
Like that, like it just is. Now, by my own doing, Seinfeld season 9, motherfucker, like I don't want to do a bunch of interviews and talk about BS. I don't want to be on Instagram all the time. I don't want to go do interviews with people who don't care about me and don't even know just because I'm a hot topic. I don't want to be in the studio like, okay, what's hot right now? What's Drake rapping on? What's this? Like, no, I don't want to do that. And because I don't want to do that, I know that maybe the music that I'm going to make here on out might not necessarily be the most popular. I'll still do hundreds of millions of plays and on Spotify and da da. And that's great.
But it's different.
But I had to really, yeah, it's different. It's totally different. And just, dude, my main focus, like literally, like I said, is this film that I wrote. Like, it's like, that's all I care about right now.
No, that's amazing. I think it's more sustainable too. I think that's the other thing. It's like, you know, when you're not a professional athlete, you're worried about your body collapsing at any moment. How can you set up a lifestyle or a career that you actually can do it as long as you want to do it?
I think that's important. And I think asking yourself, like, why, you know, like you said, sure. Enough. I'll tell you this, man, I have enough money. You know what I mean? Like, I have enough, like, it doesn't need to be this. I used to look back on 2018, my $30 million year, my, you know, biggest song in the world, all this other stuff. And I used to be scared. Like, I hope this isn't the pinnacle. Like, I hope this isn't the height of me as Logic. Like, I really hope. And then I started being like, well, why not? I mean, it
That'd
was
be pretty
great
good.
Year. Yeah. You made a lot of money. You made an impact. So what if that's your biggest year and you're headlining Lollapalooza for 100,000 people? Maybe you do that again. Maybe you don't. And the crazy part is that I know I can do it. Like, if I want to, I can call, you know, I don't know, Marshmello or so-and-so and be like, yo, let's get the band back together, man. We going. But why? Like, for me, it's like, if I'm going to do a song with Marshmello, it's just because we're homies and it'll be fun. Now it's not the strategic, like, okay, if we got Logic and Marshmello on a record and we got it. Now it's just like, no. Like literally, I'm working on an album right now that I haven't really talked about. And it is just so fun. It's just some raw hip hop Tribe Called Quest shit that's like so not even popular. And I'm doing it because I love it. And that's it. That's all that matters.
That's the best, man. I'm very happy for you. That is that's the bright future, right? Getting to do what you want when you want it.
100%.
Dude, it was so awesome to meet. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for being good at what you do, man. Cause it's always really cool to, yeah, seriously, to like speak with somebody who takes the time and actually cares, you know, to talk to, the person about things that matter to them. And I feel like we're very like-minded in that way. So thank you.
Well, I think what I'm actually good at is writing books. This is just something, you know, you also do, but, I think you'd like the books, if you ever checked them out.
Oh, dude, 100%. Actually, I'm going to order them all. JT, make sure I do that. I'm not lying.
All right.
I have to study, and I just love to buy books. It's like bad because I haven't read all of them, but I like, you know what I mean? But I just love it. I love to be surrounded by books, and I'm definitely excited to check out your stuff. You're a very articulate man.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Well, hit me up. Hit me up if you like them, and we'll stay in touch.
Okay, man. I'm really sorry I was 5 minutes late. Never happened
again,
I promise.
Not a problem at all. This is awesome. My newest book, Courage is Calling, Fortune Favors the Brave, is now available for pre-order. We've got a bunch of amazing bonuses. You can get signed copies, of course. I'm so proud of this book. General Jim Mattis has called it a superb handbook for crafting a purposeful life. Matthew McConaughey, also a father, called it an urgent call to arms to each and all of us. I do hope you check it out. It's my first in the Four Virtues series, Courage, Temperance, Justice, Wisdom.
Courage is calling. Fortune favors the brave. If you want to pre-order it, I'd really appreciate your support. Go to dailystoic.com/pre-order. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Daily Stoic early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Guy Raz's How I Built This is a podcast where each week he talks to the founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you hear these entrepreneurs really go into their story. And Guy is an incredible interviewer. He doesn't just dance around the surface. He has real questions because he himself is an entrepreneur. He's built this huge show and this huge company. In a recent episode, they talked to the founder of Liquid Death, that crazy water company that's become this billion-dollar brand. Follow the show on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. And for a deep dive in daily business content, listen to Wondery the destination for business podcasts with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.